All right, Bill Allen, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Man, it's a beautiful day here in Chicago. I'm so happy that you're here on the First Deal Experience. And of course, to our listeners who don't know what this podcast is about, it's where I bring successful real estate investors and entrepreneurs, and I have them share the story of their first deal. Because a lot of times, we put these individuals who speak from stage, whether it's guys like Brandon Turner or Tai Lopez, and we kind of put them on a pedestal and we kind of forget that they're human beings too. So like those individuals, I have an individual here on this episode of the First Deal Experience who is no stranger in front of the camera, no stranger to the stage, and has spoken in front of thousands of people and very good friends with guys like Russell Brunson, and a lot of cool cats out there in the industry. So Bill Allen, welcome, man. Thanks for being here. Thanks for taking your time out of your busy schedule to talk about your first deal.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm actually really excited about this because I think the difference between investors who have done zero deals and having done one deal is like light years difference. And the difference between somebody who's done one and 100 is just small step. So that's what I've realized over this time. We've done, almost 750 deals or so now at this point in the last like 5 years in my company.
Wow.
And you still remember that first deal, and it's like the hardest leap to make to go from zero to one. So I know
Yeah.
that this is going to help a lot of people.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. So obviously, based on what you just said, right? I mean, a lot of people can kind of just assume that you're a very well-experienced real estate investor. You've done a lot, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that as we share, talk about your story. But talk to us first before even that first deal. How did you even learn about real estate investing? Where did you come about that?
Well, so I got a military background. I flew helicopters and airplanes for the Navy for a long
Yeah.
time. I
Thank you
still
for your
do
service.
part-time. You're welcome. It's been an honor of mine. It's amazing, amazing job, and I still get to do it from time to time. So I still get to go to Pensacola to fly for them. But when I was at college, I went to College of Georgia Tech in Atlanta, and I had a commanding officer there at the school who said that he bought a house in every duty station and always made money. So that was my first just quick introduction to it, and it was just in the back of my mind for a long time. I didn't take any action on that for a long time. I was a renter as a flight student, just rented apartments, rented a triplex. I've rented all through until I got to San Diego in 2006, and I never took action on it. But that was what I still remember that conversation. I still remember him saying that, and it stuck with me all the way until now. So that was the first introduction, and then I got beat up in the last real estate crash really bad on a condo in San Diego. I bought a 700 square foot condo and the market tanked. I bought it in 2006. I sold it in 2009. So you can imagine what happened. I bought it for $385,000 and sold it for $200,000. And that was
Wow.
my like intro. And I was losing $800 a month renting it out when I left San Diego. So I had no idea what I was doing. I got an 80% first mortgage, 20% second. I had no, like none of my own cash in the deal. And but it was a personal place. It was a place I was going to live. The government bailed me out of that, so I actually broke even on it. So if I, so I when I sold it for 200, it was like I sold it for 385. So I got lucky. I got really lucky. And that's kind of when I woke up and said, okay, I've got to learn more about this real estate thing if I'm going to do this again. And so before I bought my next house, I just kind of started educating myself a little bit and reading up on it. That was kind of my first taste of real estate as a non-investment property, but
Yeah.
I knew that it can get you if you don't know what you're doing.
And you said that was 2009.
Yep, I sold that house in 2009, and I bought another house that I ran the numbers as a rental property. So I bought the house for me to live in, and I knew that I was going to leave with the military in a couple of
Yeah.
years, so I was going to rent it out.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I think a lot of people want to know at this point, you had your lesson, you got your lesson from the school of hard knocks, right? Let's say. And everyone's a student of the school of hard knocks. I always tell people, whether you want it or not, everyone's a student. So what did you start doing, right? So what did you start doing? Did you read books? Did you go to seminars? Did you watch some infomercial and buy in? What did you exactly do to start learning about real estate investing? Because it sounds like you took it seriously after selling that condo or selling that house in 2009.
Yeah, well, so at that point, I said, all right, I'm going to be a landlord, right? I want to buy these houses. I want to kind of hold on to them. And I was going to hold on to that house, but I was losing $800 a month. And my friend told me about that housing assistance program for the government. So it made sense for me to cut and run, right? And so at that point, I didn't know anything about buying houses off market. It was all through realtors, all that stuff. And it was just kind of what people were telling me. And I started looking at some of the online forums and things like that. You mentioned Brandon Turner. I started looking at like listening to early podcasts, Bigger Pockets a little bit. But that took me years, like I'd say probably 3 years of just learning in the background and living my life. Like I was still flying for the Navy. I was pretty much flying nonstop at that point. I was young, I was still single, no kids, and I was just flying nonstop. And I was investing in the stock market. And I was on a forum called the Bogleheads. John Bogle is the guy who started Vanguard. Okay. So I read books on stocks, and all my money was in the stock market. And they would trash talk real estate. And it wasn't a great investment. So if you ever talk to an index fund investor, they're very risk averse. They don't want to be involved in real estate and things like that. And they just don't know it. So yeah. I was in a world that was very anti real estate. If you brought it up inside those forums, it's like bringing up the stock market inside a real estate forum, right? It's like talking about the other team at the Super Bowl in that locker room, right? So I was at a point where I was like, I still believe this CEO of mine. I still believe that there's money to be made there. I'm seeing it. So I'm living in the house right now. From 2009, when I bought that house, to 2012, I was living in that house. So I didn't have a rental yet. My last rental was losing $800 a month. I was just kind of educating myself. So I was watching YouTube videos. I was tearing out I redid the bathroom. I refinished granite by hand that I found behind a warehouse somewhere. I cut a hole in it, put a vessel sink in there. I was watching HGTV like crazy. That's where I was learning from. HGTV, a couple of online forums, and really trying to understand, like, is real estate the way that I should go? Because I wanted to be a millionaire. Like my whole goal was one day be a millionaire, figured I'd do it by the time I was like 50, 60 years old in retirement, right? So that was it. I was starting to learn. When I really like took that to the next level, I went to test pilot school in England. And while I was there, my rental property was making me money. We had it rented out. And then I was educating myself during my off time by reading books. I was incredibly cheap, read books, didn't pay for seminars. I didn't even buy books. Like I had a library card and I would get the book online or get the audiobook for free. Like that's how cheap I was. I was really thrifty and frugal. I was reading a couple other blogs about like being really cheap and stuff too. So that was my world. Like hopefully that sets the tone for a transformation that can happen in the future. But like really anti paying for things, anti seminars at that point, anti books. I just wouldn't invest in that stuff.
Yeah. So it sounds like you really personified that quote by Tony Robbins when it says, you know, people never lack resources. It's always the lack of resourcefulness, right? And it sounds like you really embodied that. So obviously resourcefulness, that's a mindset, right? It's a mentality. It's the way people go about business. Tell me about the differences between the mindset you had before 2008 and after that big, you know, almost that scare, right? You told me that the government bailed you out, but there was, for you, it was such a big scare, you know, it was such a mindset shift. Tell me about the differences between those two mindsets, you know, before and after 2008, 2009.
Well, you know, I think at that point, like I didn't have anybody that depended on me. At that point, I'm trading time for money, like nonstop. That's all I did. And it wasn't even like 2008 to 2009. That was all the way through like till 2012, 2013. Like I was just trading time for money. I was just work. I didn't know anybody who made more than $200,000 a year their entire life. I had never been around people who are making millions of dollars or doing in any business, let alone real estate. And so my mindset was very much of you work hard, you get paid, you save your money, you save more than you make, and that's where you go. So, and that's how you get to the place that you want to be. And that was it. Like, I don't know. I think my mindset then was just kind of like, it was kind of happy-go-lucky. I wasn't the most serious person. I was kind of just like to have fun, screw around, and I'd save money. I looked at like cutting off a $10 Starbucks or not spending this was going to save me money instead of figuring out how I could make more money. I just didn't think that you could create money, create capital, it just wasn't in my mindset. And that wasn't in 2009 either, or 2012 for that matter. It was more like, you know, 2013, 2014, before I started to come out of that library card world of mine of just saving is the key to wealth, because that's what I thought. And yeah, it's not possible. Like I wanted to, now I just try to supercharge my income. And that mindset really shifted around 2013, 2014, right around there when I did invest in myself.
Yeah. So I want to shift gears now to what you just talked about, making that transition I want you to talk a little bit more about that. But beforehand, it sounds like you did spend a lot of time at the library. What are some books that you'd recommend people read that for you was just an absolute game changer?
Yeah, so the early books that really changed things for me, number one was, you know, a lot of people say Rich Dad, Poor Dad. For me, that was something that I already knew. Like the assets and liabilities, that I knew that. I understood that concept. And if you haven't read that, like that's probably step one for most people, right? And then the thing that really got me, like I read a couple of different mindset books, but for me, like flipping houses, my first experience was actually flipping and renovating houses. And I was a flipper to begin with. And Jay Scott's book, like the book on flipping houses that Bigger Pockets put out, that book is probably the one that resonated with me the most because I'm an engineer. I like numbers, and it just like laid it out for me of exactly like what I should expect. And granted, remember, this is when that book came out. Yeah. So the numbers in there, like the rehab costs and stuff, they were about on par with what I needed. And so that's the one that sticks out to me a ton. The One Thing by Gary Keller came out around that time that I was changing a lot of what was going on. But you know, I read so many books now that when I look back to that time, it's kind of like the Gary Keller had a book too then with agents and real estate investors. And that was one that I really liked also. I remember getting this big fat book from the library and checking it out and reading it. But like I had a time in my life where I was reading 50 books a year for like 3 years. And so there's newer books I think that have shaped me and molded me. So when I look back to that time, it's really hard to say because they were, a lot of them were like cemented in that time of 2013, 2012, something like that, where they might not be the best recommendations today.
Yeah. And you talked about, you know, that shift you made in 2013, 2014, you know, tell me about that transition.
So that's when I really started diving into a lot more podcasts and going to RIA meetings and becoming more active. So I bought my second rental property then, and it was 600 square foot basement. I was a test pilot in Patuxent River, Maryland at the time for the Navy. And I only say that because it was a very busy time in my life. I got married. I met a girl when I was in England. She came back to the US with me. We got married and she was pregnant with our first son. And we were in the basement of this house. We bought this short sale and we're going to rent it out. We were renting a house because we wanted to rent in a place that was cheaper and buy this house that has a higher rent in a nicer neighborhood. And we were going to rent it out. And so we fixed 1,000 square foot basement. I finished the entire thing by ourselves in 6 weeks. Wow. Did everything except for the drywall. I hired some guys to do drywall, but I did everything else. Like I'm talking the framing, the electrical, the plumbing, the tile, I had a guy come in and pull the carpet and everything for us too. The painting, like my wife was down there with a respirator on, like 3 months pregnant with our son, we were painting the basement. And so it's like, what were we doing? But at that time, that's the mindset that I had, right? Saving a bunch of money. So I got to that point of like, why am I doing this? I have 2 full-time jobs now. And I started really diving in to listen to podcasts, and I hearing people say they're doing 100 houses a year and 150 houses a year, and they're fixing and flipping this many properties all around the country. And I just got to the point where I was like, is this really possible? Like, can they really do this? Because I can't even do like one house a year and all my other stuff that I do, my full-time job and everything. So I really started diving into this concept of like, who are these people? What do they know that I don't know? And how do I find out? And I kind of landed on a couple podcasts that the presenter, the person on the podcast, really resonated with me. Like I felt like I knew them, I trusted them, I liked them. And their core values just kind of attracted me, it seemed. And so they launched a product. This guy launched a $25,000 mastermind, like his brand new mastermind. And I said, I've never even like bought a book. I don't spend money on education. And all the free forums and everywhere that I'm spending time right now, remember, they're anti-coaching, anti-spending money. Like everybody talks about, don't spend your money. You can figure it all out for free. Like it's all there. It's all out there. Just get a book. Just go stay here on the forums, watch YouTube videos, those kind of things. And I get it. That stuff is there. So I had this dilemma at that time. Like, do I pay for this education, this mentor, this mastermind program? And this isn't when masterminds were really big, right? This is 2013, right? And I didn't know anybody in a mastermind. But I knew the people in the RIA groups that I was going to, they weren't at, like, I wanted to go bigger than they were than the top person there. I wanted to figure out how to just blow it out of the water. I've always been incredibly competitive. And so I called my dad. My dad started a engineering business from our basement. I remember he put in like probably 10 hard years of work and finally got to the place of becoming a successful engineer with a successful business. And I called him up and I said, hey, like, what do you think about this? Like, spending $25,000 is a ton of money. It's that's a car. I was like, yeah. I said, I spent that much money on my car and I'm pinching pennies. And he said, you know what? He said, son, we bring in people that for $100,000 that consult in our company every year to figure out how to become more efficient. He said, it sounds like you're hiring a consultant to come in who's already doing it, who can help you figure out how to do it. He said, I don't know. He said, it's your money and you need to think about it and do it. And at the time, I had flipped one house then, made $45,000. And then the next year I had flipped, I had another house that was going that looked like I was going to make about the same. And so I said, you know what? I've got these profits that are coming in. Why don't I just allocate them to this thing? And so it was like 2 years of time spent of starting to kind of listen to podcasts and do all that stuff before I finally said yes and made that commitment, paid 25 grand. And I went from doing one deal a year to doing, we did 67 transactions that first year, 12 flips and 55 wholesale deals in 8 months.
Wow. So somebody just heard that in their car and went like, holy cow, you know, or like maybe they were working out and they're literally just turning off the treadmill and be like, oh my goodness, like who is this dude? So you went from one to 67 transactions in 1 year. You know, tell me about the top three lessons, right? What were the top three changes that you made to go from one to 67?
Yeah, the first one is I changed the way that I think about everything. And the only way that I did that, it wasn't like a light switch, by the way, so it didn't happen overnight. But I sat in a room where the two people that were running this mastermind group, one of them was sitting, I mean, I still remember where I was. There were 20 of us in this room in San Clemente, California. And I mean, keep in mind, I paid $25,000. I'd never met anybody. And I got on a plane to go to San Diego to this first event. And I was just hoping that there would be somebody at this hotel, because I heard so many stories of people that getting ripped off and all those things. And there was one of the guys was sitting on, he was like sitting on this little half counter, and they were just spending time with us. They were fully engaged in what we were doing. And we all had our computers out. We were working in our business, like typing emails and stuff. And I'm getting their deals sent to me from them, and they haven't touched their phone or their computer in 3 days. And the other guy is sitting there talking, and both of their wholesale deals are coming in from their company and stuff. It's running 100% without them. So I'm watching this happen, and it just showed me that it's possible. And when I got around them, they were the nicest down-to-earth guys that I've ever met. And they were just great people. And honestly, they weren't any like more educated than me, smarter, any of that stuff. They were just normal people. One of the guys couldn't even screw in a light bulb, and he's running a fix and flip company that does 150 deals a year. So they just showed me that it was possible. It basically gave me permission to be able to do it and to see somebody. If you were sitting next to them on an airplane, you wouldn't know who they were.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know that they had a couple $1 million in the bank account, make $1 million a year, any of that stuff. So that to me said, okay, these are ethical guys that I can get behind that I want to emulate and figure out how to become. So I just latched onto them and took everything. I was just, whatever you do, I'm doing. And I'm going to tweak it a little bit and do it my way. That's the first one. The second one is I had to hire somebody. I was definitely afraid to do that. I definitely didn't want to, and I was scared, but I was flying all the time, 10, 12 hours a day. How can I run a business while I'm doing that? I needed somebody to work when I wasn't there. So that was the big hurdle that I had to jump over. I remember telling my mentor, Andy, I was like, I'm not hiring anybody. And he's like, well, you want to flip 12 houses a year. You're having trouble doing one. How do you plan on doing that? Like I said, I don't know. You're the one who's got all the systems. You tell me how to do it. And he said, well, you gotta figure out how to outsource some of those tasks that you're doing. Like you're going to Home Depot, you're putting lockboxes on houses, you're turning on utilities, you're meeting contractors, you're doing everything. He said, you can't grow a company that way. So I had to hire somebody. That was the second thing. And the third thing is I think like ultimately I had to believe in myself. I made this investment in myself, but now I had to say, okay, I can do it and I have to stay the course. It took me 4.5 months to get my first deal after that, like my first deal from direct mail marketing. And I paid this $25,000, joined this mastermind group. It took me 4.5 months to get that first deal. It wasn't overnight. It wasn't like 2 days later. And so most people quit. You know, honestly, had I not paid that $25,000, I probably would have quit. You know, if I didn't have the support, if I didn't have the accountability, if I didn't have the people there, if I didn't see that it was possible, I probably would have quit. So those are probably my three things. Like, and inside that number three is probably just take massive action, just actually go and do things. So, and stay the course. So
that's
probably the big things that made it possible. It's not an overnight success. It doesn't just happen right away. Some people, you know, get their first deal in 2-3 weeks. Some of us, it takes 4.5 months like me.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. I mean, I don't think I did my first deal until year three, right? Until for me learning real estate and, you know, going to countless events. So to kind of summarize your three points in terms of, you know, what happened that year, what journey you took on during that first year of expanding, it sounds like the three advices was number one, you know, the last thing, which was believe in yourself. And, you know, I'll attest to that because it sounds so cliche, but man, is it true. You know, it is so true. Now, it sounds like the second one is, which you mentioned first, is find people who are actually doing it and latch onto them and shadow them and understand that they're humans too, right? You mentioned a lot of these guys that were doing 150 houses a year. You were realizing they're the nicest, most down-to-earth guys. And you know, there's really no that big of a difference, which is absolutely true as well. You know, I remember when I met Mark Cuban, I think about a year ago, the dude was like the most laid back. In many ways, he was very dorky the way he walked too. And I'm like, wow, that guy's a billionaire. Like if he can do it, I could definitely do it. And I think the third one is you mentioned secondly, remind me again, Bill, you mentioned that it was number two on your list.
You got to outsource. Like you
outsource,
have got,
that's right.
You've got to
build
figure
a team.
Out what you're good at and what you're not so good at. And lean, and don't try, people say strengthen your weaknesses. Like I am highly, highly against that. Don't strengthen your weaknesses. Like figure out who's strong, where you're weak, and work together. Like really figure that out. Like you've got a strength, like pour into your strengths. Your strengths are the most important thing. And I didn't realize that for a long time. Like I was kind of trying to do everything myself, everything. I mean, if I went back, you know, 6-7 years ago, it's sad where I spent my time.
Mm. Yeah. So I want to kind of top off the podcast with, you know, advice that you would give to individuals who are looking to do their first deal. But before we go ahead and do that, I kind of want to ask you a question that I've had in the back of my mind for the last 5-10 minutes. And that question is a question that I get a lot. And the question that I get is, well, Daniel, you know, I know I want to do real estate. You know, I know the benefits of it. You know I like it better than stocks, commodities, and bonds. But, you know, what made you want to pick this, right? So you're predominantly a fix and flip guy. And I want to be careful because I don't want to pigeonhole you, but you know, I know that's your brand and that's predominantly your business from what I see, and vice versa. You know, I love multifamily. You know, I'm predominantly a multifamily investor, and you and I are in quite different, you know, spaces when it comes to the real estate industry, but both of us, from what it seems, agree on everything when it comes to real estate success. So for you personally, what made you want to pick fix and flips, you know, development? What made you want to pick that opposed to, you know, maybe like short sales, wholesaling, buy and hold?
So it's interesting that you asked that. So I pretty much just love the deals. Like I love doing deals and I like the volume and velocity and speed at which I can do a lot of them. And I like that some of the risk protection in that. So my journey has been landlord, bought 10 houses. I thought that was going to be it. I'd make $120,000 on top of my retirement and get there. I got there. I sold all my 10 houses and, you know, I was flipping along the way. I was the flipper. I identified as the flipper. And now we do like 90% wholesaling now. So we do almost 200 deals a year, like 150 of those, 180 of those are wholesale deals. And I also am in some capacity, either a limited partner or general partner, in almost 3,000 units right now.
Wow.
So like, and now we are doing multifamily deals. Like we're right now have an LOI in for a 93 unit building here outside of Nashville. And we're closing on a 49 unit in Chattanooga. And I love raising money. Like I'm a huge part of raising the capital for those deals and bringing the investor relationships in and working with my team. So, and we're also doing land development deals. We got like 140 units here in Nashville, 140 acres. We've got another 120 acres under contract that we're now taking to a point where we can sell it to a developer and a builder. So I think the interesting part of that question is, it's really like, what excites you in all of this? Like what interests you? And that can change over time. A lot of people think they have to start with wholesaling. You don't. You can absolutely start with giant multifamily buildings. You also don't have to start anywhere. The cool thing about real estate is you can get in wherever your skill set is needed best. And so I tell people all the time, like, what are you really good at? And then figure out what's needed and where it's needed and what really excites you. What I don't love about multifamily is I could put together this huge deal, spend all this time and resources and money up front to do that one or two deals that I plan on doing this year, and they fall out. Like during due diligence, something happens, and who knows, coronavirus hits, and our whole underwriting in our 185 unit that we had here goes down the tubes. And we're like, man, I don't know. And then Fannie Mae comes and says, you need a lot more reserves. And next thing we know, we got to raise $2 million more in capital to get that deal closed. And we said, hey, we got to walk away from this thing. And it sucked because it took 3 months to get where we were. But in a wholesale and fix and flip, it's like when one deal falls out, let me figure out how to pump another one in, yeah. Or I have enough deals to keep going. So the way that I look at that in my flipping and wholesale business, it's active income for me. So it drives me money. I get paid W-2 income. I work 2 hours a week in that business. And then I take that money and I go invest in other people's syndications, or I figure out how I also do hard money loans. I do transactional funding. I figure out how to make my money work for me in whatever aspect. And I get to have fun. Like, I love that I can control, I control the business. I control the outcome. My value of the time and the effort and the experience that I have is directly proportional to the money that I get in return and my value to the marketplace. When I put my money in the stock market, I had no control in what I was doing with it or what happened to it. And that's good and bad, by the way. When things don't go well in real estate, it's my fault. When things go well, some of it's my fault, but most of it's my team's fault, right? So I don't take the credit when things go really well, but I always take the credit when things don't go so well. So I think that's, I don't know, for anybody that's listening, like, don't feel like you have to start in fix and flip. Don't feel like you have to start in wholesale. Don't feel like you have to start as a landlord. Start where you want to start. Like, and don't let anybody else tell you that you have to start as a wholesaler. Just because I, am in the wholesaling and flipping space, I want the people who are excited about that, who really get interested in it, hey, come hang out with us. If you want to be in the multifamily space, like, skip, go all the way to multifamily, go start there. You can start there. You don't have to start small.
Yeah, I love that. I love what you said about stocks versus real estate too, because, obviously if you put your money in stocks and you're putting your money in a company, at the end of the day, you're not in their boardroom. You don't have a whole lot of influence in terms of what direction they want to go. So let me ask you this, Bill. Let's say that there's somebody listening to this podcast. They're 35 years old, and I'm not particularly pinpointing out someone, by the way, but let's say they're 35 years old. They're working 8 hours a day. They're working in corporate America, and they eventually want to be a full-time real estate investor. What are some key pieces of advice you would give them? Because it sounds like you were there at one point.
Yeah, I built my business to a seven-figure company while I was full-time. I was flying about 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, and one weekend a month. And so I would say, so let's make this a woman, because we've been saying guys a lot. So we got a 35-year-old woman, because we have some really amazing, strong women in this business, which I love. And they're working full-time. The bottom line is, like, figure out your why. Step one is, like, what are you doing this for? If you have that strong why, that strong purpose, that strong drive towards something, you're going to make it happen. It's just the way it is. And you'll be dedicated. If it's like plan B or plan C or plan D for you, and you just want to check it out, dip your toe in, like, I'd say save your money and just stick with your job, because you're going to quit. When you hit the wall, you're going to turn around and walk backwards instead of figure out how to scale it. And jump over the wall. So dedicate some time. Like, you can find time in anything that you do. I got up early. I worked when I was starting my business, got up early, worked for 2 hours. Then my son got up. My wife got up. We had breakfast. I went to work. I did 10 or 12 hours a day. I was dog tired when I got home. I played with my son. We had dinner. I put him to bed. And then I went into the office for 2 more hours. And then I slept like 6 hours, 5 hours a night. And I repeated that every single day. And on the weekends, I was running appointments, and I was working in the office for some time and spending some time with my family. I went to my wife and I said, honey, like, I want to get this business going. I want to build a business like my mentors have, a seven-figure business. I want to figure out how to do it. And I'm probably not going to be around that much this year, but it's going to pay off in the long run. And now, now we've got just like huge, like, whole life insurance policies with paid up additions for me and my family, all of our kids. We're building like legacy wealth for my kids and their kids. And we've got some amazing things, and I can do whatever I want to do. Like, I can spend time with them, And I'm the soccer coach for my son. I'm the head of the popcorn group inside of his Cub Scout thing, his Cub Scout pack. I am at every single doctor's appointment for my middle son who has special needs. I'm able to be there. And so like the time that you put in is that investment. So you can build this business on the side. It can happen. And I was flying full time and I had like 6-7 people working for me. We did 1.35 million that year and I had a full-time job the whole time. So it's doable. You can do it. You just have to be committed and dedicated to it. So don't be afraid to start, take some action and check it out. Be committed to it because just it's like the first sight of some failure, some issues or problems. Like if you're not all in, you're going to be out real fast.
Yeah. I love it. And you know, I can't help but notice what shirt you're wearing. You know, I don't know if that's like a brand, you know, I don't know if that says Nike or Adidas, but it says Live. I'm assuming that has to pertain to an event of some sort. Where can people learn more about this event?
Yeah, we do an event every October where it's 3 days long. We bring in like incredible keynote speakers and other real estate investors, flippers and wholesalers and marketing sales consultants and things. It's called Flip Hacking Live. It's in October and you can go to fliphackinglive.com and check it out. So it's virtual this year. It's a 3-day virtual event. So you can check it out from your home and it's incredibly cheap this year. Like usually you have to get a plane ticket, a hotel, negotiate 5 days away from your family and stuff. And anybody with a computer internet connection can check it out this year. It's really pretty cool. I appreciate you mentioned that. I pretty much brand myself everywhere that I go, shirts, hats, things like that. I mean, I think it's the key to what we do. Like, do you believe in your product or not? So,
yeah, I love it, man. Absolutely. And you know what, let me vouch for that event real quick. You know, I'll be honest and say I've never been, but let me tell you for all the listeners right now, you know, COVID, every opportunity is a crisis and every crisis is an opportunity, you know? And I would definitely recommend, you know, attend Flip Hacking Live because, you know, what an opportunity, right? Like what Bill just said, you know, you don't have to pay for a flight. You don't have to pay for a hotel. You don't have to worry about food. You don't have to negotiate time away from family. And you get the same pieces of information that you would have gotten had you have gone to an actual physical location. So I encourage you to all the listeners, right? I encourage you guys to check it out. You know, go to the event. It's virtual, you know, and I'm sure it's affordable. And also, Bill, where can people find you, right? Do you have an Instagram? Do you have a YouTube channel that people can check out?
Yeah. So we have a 7-figure flipping YouTube channel that I'm just kind of ramping up. I have an Instagram page. We have 7-figure flipping, obviously. I don't know Instagram very well. So I would encourage anybody to come check me out on there. It's Bill Allen REI. I honestly am trying to figure out that platform along with YouTube. It's interesting when you get into a world of information, it's like, I get overloaded. Like I have such a Facebook presence and it's been my go-to for so long. That even just, I'm so intimidated by this stuff, but it's exactly what we just talked about, right? For real estate is you get into this different world and it's fun. Like I just try to figure it out. I'll try to post something different. Do people engage with this or this? And it's like doing your first deal all over again. We're constantly like evolving into the next piece of ourselves. Like we're losing that identity that we had and creating this new identity. And it's kind of fun. So hopefully if you hear anything in this and you start saying like, that stuff sounds like fun and you're that 35-year-old woman who's working full time and you're not having fun, then you say, you know what? I need to get rid of this old identity of like, don't let your job define yourself, your age, your upbringing, your family, whatever anybody's saying about you. Like if you feel something and you want to go somewhere else, go. Like don't waste time. We don't have any more of it. So I realize that all that came from like Instagram, but I'm realizing that I'm having to like shed these issues, these limiting beliefs that are holding me back even now. Like I've done that in the real estate world, but now in a different world, it's like all new, the same things keep coming up. So don't be afraid to like put your old self aside and go into that place. If real estate's calling you, you're listening to this podcast, it obviously is, like figure out how to go and then who to follow. Like you're on this podcast, right? You found the right people, like follow them. If they do something, if they have a YouTube channel, if they have a event that they do, if they have a program, like don't be afraid to invest in yourself. Like that is the key. Like invest in yourself is so important. Like I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in my formal education, but I wouldn't even buy a book in my self-education. And so that game's changed. Now I spend six figures at least a year on that. It's so, so important. It's way more important than my formal education of engineering, which I don't use at all.
Nice. Nice. I'm sure you do, right? In the way you think about deals and certain things like that. So I want to just make sure that people get it. What is your YouTube channel? Because I actually have my phone out right now and I'm going to subscribe. What's your YouTube channel? What is it again?
Number seven figure flipping. So we actually did a pretty cool thing lately. We did a TV show. We actually produced like an HGTV quality TV show on there that I followed a friend of mine around in Salt Lake City who flipped four houses in 7 days. Wow. And we did a 9-episode series of it, kind of walking you through that. Like, and I say HGTV, but it's like the investor version. Like, we actually give away like his Gantt chart, his scope of work, like all the stuff that he does. It was really cool and really fun to do. I have like I'm like the host. I get to sit in my studio here and like talk about how awesome he is. So he, nice. His team is amazing. He's showing a lot of our folks how to get their timelines down on their rehabs stuff. So that's probably like the one thing that we produced this year that I'm really proud of.
Yeah, very good. And to check that out again, that's seven figure flipping on YouTube. I just subscribed, so you got one more subscriber, my man. Hey, Bill, thank you so much for being on the FDE. Really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, everyone. Daniel Kwok here once again. I hope you enjoyed that episode of the First Deal Experience podcast. If you're wanting to do your first ever deal or scale your existing portfolio, I recently wrote a book to show you how I went from 0 to 75 rental units in just 1 year. Just head over to 0to75units.com for your copy. Again, that's 0to75units.com.